So stay tuned. Lots of things still going on this year. And so we expect it to be an active fall.
Welcome to Off the Chart, a business and medicine podcast featuring lively and informative conversations with healthcare experts, opinion leaders, and practicing physicians about the challenges facing doctors and medical practices. My name is Austin Luttrell. I'm the assistant editor over at Medical Economics, and I'd like to thank you for joining us today. This week, we're talking politics, as Keith Reynolds, the editor of Physicians Practice, is joined by Anders Gilberg, senior vice president of government affairs at the Medical Group Management Association, or MGMA. They'll be covering the impact of new healthcare legislation on Medicaid and Medicare payments, the policy and administrative challenges facing medical groups, key upcoming deadlines, and the latest MGMA advocacy efforts. Plus, you'll get a preview of the MGMA's annual Leaders Conference, September 28th through October 1st in Orlando. Medical Economics and Physicians Practice will be on the ground, and we'll have plenty more on that when the conference rolls around. With that, a big thank you again to Anders for joining us, and let's get into the episode.
Hey there, folks. We're here today with Anders Gilberg, a Senior Vice President for Government Affairs at the Medical Group Management Association. How are you doing today, Anders?
Good, Keith. How are you?
Oh, I'm fantastic. Any day I get to chat with you is always a good one. I don't want to take up too much of your time, so let's dig right into it. Just give us a quick and dirty explainer on, what is the One Big Beautiful Bill Act?
Okay. Well, that's actually the name of the bill, the act now. So it's not just we're using shorthand. So it's an interesting name for a bill. I think, beauty is in the eye of the beholder. There's just so much in that bill that I'll probably be just talking about the healthcare provisions that MGMA is focused on.
It's probably better not to get in the weeds on everything else.
I think so too. So the One Big Beautiful Bill, the key issues for medical groups that we are monitoring closely will be, it's really kind of future really at this point, would be implementation of the Medicaid cuts that the Congressional Budget Office predicts that, potentially around 10 million people will lose coverage as a result of the Medicaid cuts. And a lot of the cuts are related to kind of administrative issues within Medicaid, like work requirements and things that sound really easy. But the fact is that, in some of the states that have, tested out some of the work requirement reporting, it's just shown that, while someone might be actually doing the work, it's really about did they report at the right frequency? And if they didn't, then they lose their coverage. So that's kind of what CBO is looking at in the future. The one thing from like an executive standpoint or a physician standpoint that just to remind everybody is that the Medicaid cuts just really won't take place, or these administrative issues will not like be implemented until really 2027 and 2028. And so for all of the consternation about the Medicaid cuts, they still might not be even implemented in the same form as the One Big Beautiful Bill did it. And why is that? I mean, just stepping back, a lot of Republicans who were in the majority kind of had to hold their nose on that provision with the bill because they were concerned about their constituents, and they may still revisit it. There's an election next year prior to implementation of the Medicaid cuts, and so we could see changes to what they're doing, what's scheduled to happen in 2027 before it even is implemented. So stay tuned. I will say, Keith, like one of the things that worried me a little bit is I talked to some members and they were talking about some of the medical groups in their community taking action and closing locations and, actually making business decisions based on this. I would just say, wait, stay tuned, see what happens. There's also a big state component too. It depends largely with Medicaid where you are practicing in your state. So the Medicaid issue is huge. We're monitoring it. We obviously express extreme concern over the Medicaid provisions in the bill. There was a positive piece in the bill that will increase physician reimbursement in Medicare next year, 2.5%. So that was a small success in an otherwise huge bill. I will say is that we expressed a great deal of dismay that Congress did not fix the 2025 problem, though. So medical groups and physicians received a 2.83% cut in 2025, and that was not addressed. So even with the 2.5% increase next year, we still aren't where we were last year. So that's a disappointment. And it really speaks to the fact that we need a permanent solution. And that's what we're continuing to work on, is like find a permanent solution to all these Medicare cuts to physicians.
All righty. And I know you guys' big big topic lately has been about administrative workload and payment reconciliation and the like. Anything in this big old bill that might actually give some relief?
I don't know if I'd say it would give a whole lot of relief in the bill. However, I think when you do have a situation with the potential for such a large number of beneficiaries and patients to lose their insurance, I think one of the things MGMA will be doing is to make sure that our members are very much using the best practices for example, eligibility verification of insurance before the patient comes in. And just to make sure that their revenue cycle management processes are efficient and in good standing, because there could potentially be issues with the Medicaid population going forward. And then also, there is an expiration of the Affordable Care Act subsidies at the end of this year, which poses a more immediate potential issue if not renewed by Congress by the end of the year. So again, good practice management and things like eligibility verification, so you don't have patients coming in who don't know they're uninsured, but then all of a sudden they're uninsured, and then you have to make tough decisions about whether or not you see that patient, whether they have to be cash paying. And then a lot of that money will just go uncollected as a result.
All right. So in, a lot of the horse trading to get this bill through, it seems like Congress has got a bit more of an appetite to touch these sort of third rail issues, things that were unthinkable in the past. Do you think this is going to open up any doors for, administrative simplification sort of deals, the bills you guys have supported in the past? You think those might be able to get through now?
I'm just not sure. I mean, the last Congress was the least productive Congress for potentially ever in terms of the number of bills that actually passed. And we're talking like 200, probably like 10,000 were introduced. And so what we're seeing now is, again, individual bills don't pass. They're part of like an amalgamation at the end, or as part of the big, beautiful bill, something called the Reconciliation Act was used. But we're still pursuing a number of legislative initiatives. Chief among them would be prior authorization reform, and especially some of the problems we're seeing in Medicare Advantage right now. As Medicare Advantage becomes the prominent and the majority of Medicare beneficiaries receive Medicare on Medicare Advantage, now all of a sudden they're subject to prior authorization, which they were not in traditional Medicare. So we're working on a number of bills to continue the reform efforts there, which has been interesting because, some of your folks might have heard about this it was a voluntary pledge by the insurers to fix all this problem, doing it on their own. But, we've seen such massive abuses over the last couple of years. I think we still need the legislative approach. And one of the deep ironies that I would say in terms of that pledge is many of the things that the insurers pledge to do, they're actually required to do under law, because the prior administration implemented several regulations that required a lot of those prior authorization reforms in Medicare Advantage. So they pledge to voluntarily follow the law that they have to follow. So we'll see.
Gotta love that. Gotta love that. All right, so let's pivot a little bit to the physician fee schedule. It's out. It's, as always, there's crazy cuts in weird places. You know, what's the biggest adjustment that practices are going to have to make, you know, if the fee schedule goes into effect as it's, you know, put out now?
Yeah, I think they're the major financial repercussions in the fee schedule result from two reforms that CMS is implementing. The first one deals with an adjustment to the work RVUs to, in CMS's mind, account for certain efficiencies that have occurred. But in the end, you know, it's also very critical of some of the data that came out of the American Medical Association and the specialties as part of the CPT process and the Relative Value Update Committee process. But I would say this about it. What they did was is that they just instituted a 2.5% or approximate across the board cut on thousands of codes, and they increased some, but in doing so, they created kind of just a huge swath of codes. They created a shift from, I'd say, very generalizing, and generalizing quite a bit, but from more specialty-based codes towards more primary care-based codes. So for primary care physicians, they would benefit from it. But my warning would be this: CMS's rationale for doing this across the board efficiency adjustment is that they didn't have sufficient data from the AMA and these other processes, but they definitely didn't have sufficient data to just make this broad cut. And the methodology they used doesn't really make sense to me. It's based on productivity adjustments in the Medicare Economic Index, a lot of very wonky stuff, but you know, physicians haven't received a Medicare economic index based increase in years. So, you know, the rationale is a little shaky. And what I would say is the last thing we really want is the government to then making really big arbitrary decisions on physician payment, because I don't believe that any specialty will like that in the end. So a lot of folks are at least pointing out some of the methodological issues that are going to create these shifts. So just to sum it up, you know, again, your listeners and readers, if you're in a specialty that isn't primarily primary care based, like offices based, you just need to be mindful that the RVU shifts, both on the work RVU and then some additional practice expense RVUs that could penalize, let's say, independent practices that take care of patients in a hospital setting, it would reduce their overhead. But the fact is that even if you're a surgical practice, you still have to have an office to see the patients and have nurses outside of the hospital, even if you're doing your surgery in the hospital. So some of the rationale is flawed. But again, certain surgical specialties and different other, you know, specialties might see cuts to their RVUs that will surprise them and override any increase that Congress provided in the One Big Beautiful Bill. So be mindful of that.
Say, Keith, this is all well and good, but what if someone is looking for more clinical information?
Oh, then they want to check out our sister site, patientcareonline.com, the leading clinical resource for primary care physicians. Again, that's patientcareonline.com. You know, it's the 21st century, so I've got to ask you a tech question. You know, any changes to technology or EHR that practice should be preparing for now?
Well, I mean, again, I think it's interesting with this administration. It started even with the Doge Elon Musk cuts to the government. It's like, we're going to just solve all problems with AI. And you know, AI has incredible, you know, opportunity to help solve problems, but I'm not sure, based on what we're seeing yet, if it's going to be the solution. I'll give you a couple examples. So, ironically, a lot of the folks that got fired out of some of the Medicare agencies we work with, based on AI as part of the DOGE initiative, are all being rehired now too. So, you know, I'm not sure I can say that was a big success, at least on the healthcare agencies we follow. But then also, There was a recent announcement at the White House that a number of large technology vendors and companies are going to come together and to really like improve the IT ecosystem related to interoperability and patient access to their own data using, apps and whatnot. But again, one of the areas that I think has been very clear in healthcare over the years is, for the most part, MGMA members don't really want the government telling them what to do, telling them how to treat patients. But I think, what's become clear is we do need certain standards. So all the players use the same standard. Otherwise, that creates these incredible inefficiencies in healthcare. And then everybody makes a buck off the inefficiencies. So I don't know. There's a voluntary pledge to address some of the biggest issues in health information technology today. So we'll see if that's enough. But I still think, continued focus on some of the reforms and standardization initiatives to make sure that, patients do have access to their records, but also in a way that preserves their privacy and making sure that, we don't just lose a bunch of information on Medicare patients or just patients in general, out there in the ether. And, that could be used for. Have really negative consequences when their privacy is violated.
So, President Trump has taken issue with a lot of the historically neutral data about the economy coming out of his own administration. He's making some moves on that. What sort of impact could this sort of meddling with the numbers have on future fee schedules and the like?
Yeah, it would be indirect. And again, I'm not sure we have fully seen whether or not, I think you're referring to some of his consternation about the jobs number recently and the firing of the head of the Bureau of Labor Statistics, and putting one of his own folks in there. But clearly, physician payment and the Medicare Economic Index and different measures of productivity and economic, macroeconomic measures are inputted into the physician fee schedule and are reliant on important, solid numbers coming out of the government on inflation, for example. And, even though it's very indirect, but on making sure that the consumer price index and other measures of inflation are accurate is critical for then the downstream effects that we have in terms of making sure that payments to physicians keep up with inflation. I mean, unfortunately, they haven't anyway, and that is the real need for reform. But I mean, my hope is that things like government data don't become politicized to the extent that we're having to deal with that issue. I mean, the president obviously had his own concerns, but I'm not sure we have evidence yet of any kind of direct tinkering. But obviously, if there was, we would have concerns about that and the impact on Medicare payments and things like that.
Hey there, folks. My name's Keith Reynolds. I'm the editor of Physicians Practice, and this is the P2 Management Minute. When stress soars, keep spirits high with these three morale boosters. One, open huddles with gratitude. Kick off every team huddle with a 30-second win round. Staff shout out a colleague or patient moment that made their day. Drop thank you notes on colored index cards and read a few aloud each morning. Instant dopamine, stronger psychological safety. Number two, flip the negativity bias. Complaints about no-shows can hijack hallway talk. Post a whiteboard titled Today's Hurdle and Our Fix. Tackle the problems together, then wipe the hurdle away at day's end, leading the solution up as a visual win. Number three, drill emotional intelligence micro skills. At each shift change, ask on a scale of one exhausted to five energized, where are you? Low numbers, cue teammates to pitch in, grab labs, return calls before frustration spills over to patients. 5 minutes of daily EQ drills can lift well-being scores fast. Gratitude, reframing, and micro skills, your trio for positivity under pressure. For more bite-sized practice tips and tricks, make sure you visit physicianspractice.com. Thanks for watching, and I'll see you tomorrow on the P2 Management Minute. All right, so what else does MGMA have cooking out in Washington,
I'm not sure everybody knows about this, but it's a little bit of a, budgetary drama thing that we're going to hit here at the end of September. That also includes some real policy issues that are important to physicians and medical practices. So at the end of last year, a continuing resolution that would have funded the government for a longer period of time was scuttled by tweets from Elon Musk and the president. So that was back in December. And as a result, the physician payment cuts were not averted in 2025. So that scuttled all our work last year. But also included was a very small set of healthcare issues. That continuing resolution went to March, and then there was a new continuing resolution that went to the end of September. So for healthcare, two key issues are in there. One is the telehealth extension. So what that is the extension of the flexibilities that were created during COVID that allowed rural practices and urban practices to provide telehealth directly to patients and outside of what used to be a requirement that a patient literally have to go to an originating site, a HIPAA, covered originating site in order to get, for example, telehealth from a specialist in another community or in a city. So all of the conveniences over the last 5 or so years that people have grown accustomed to could expire at the end of September without being renewed. So we're watching that very closely. And obviously with the Medicare population, elderly folks who need transportation, and I'm not saying it's for everything, but it's been important to provide access to specialists as well as for chronic care management and just basic kind of primary care services with their physicians. So we're advocating for an extension. We're in fact advocating for a bill that would, at a minimum, extend it for 2 years while there's some studies done to make sure it's implemented correctly. So that's at the end of September. That's a big decision point for Congress. But it's also tied into things like the expiration of the continuing resolution, funding the government, shutting the government down, those type of issues. So it'll be highly politicized for unrelated issues. And then also, rural practices and physicians in rural areas enjoy what is known as a gypsy floor, which is the geographic price indice for the work RVU in Medicare payment calculations. Is raised to one in those areas where it's below one. So all that really means is that physicians in rural areas, for a number of years, that calculation has been overridden by Congress. So they are paid on par with their counterparts in urban areas. So payment parity for rural physicians. Well, that work gypsy floor expires at the end of September as well. And so we are advocating to keep that so rural physicians aren't disadvantaged. But there are some real key issues coming up at the end of September. And then I think just more broadly, you've got the Medicaid stuff that's a couple years out, but then the expiration of the Affordable Care Act subsidies at the end of this year are really going to come into play politically. And beneficiaries who receive their insurance on the exchange will start to get these notices of their premiums that could be up 100%. And they'll get those in October. And whether or not Congress acts to fund this extension of the Affordable Care Act subsidies to the tune of like $275 billion, that's going to be a really interesting political conundrum for a number of folks who don't love the Affordable Care Act or Obamacare, but also many of the states and those members of Congress that have expressed their dislike for the ACA are the states where the subsidies have allowed the number of beneficiaries to grow exponentially over the last several years. So states like Texas, states like Florida, states like Georgia, which might vote potentially more Republican. Those areas are going to see some of the greatest impact if Congress lets it expire. So stay tuned. Lots of things still going on this year. And so we expect it to be an active fall.
All right. So it sounds like the end of September is going to be pretty chaotic, especially for you, because you will definitely be at the MGMA Leadership Conference. Medical Economics and Physicians Practice will be there as well. What are you looking forward to?
Well, I'm looking forward to seeing you, Keith. So that's
Oh.
fun to say, yes. But no, it's a great conference this year. We're in Orlando, and this conference brings together, both just administrative folks, practice administrators, physicians in leadership positions, as well as executives across the country in the medical group ambulatory space, brings them together every year. We have a huge exhibit hall. We have a great location now in Orlando this year. And in addition to my team providing everybody with the latest and greatest on the fee schedule, what happened at the end of September, all the Washington issues. We have a whole host of really good content to allow people to, work on ways to both improve their revenue, to cut costs in their practice, to maintain a healthy workforce and make sure that, physicians in an independent practice or a hospital-owned practice, that we can reduce burnout and just some of the ills of healthcare today. So, it's really based on the concept of bringing leaders together to solve these problems and provide them an opportunity to network and really work together to both learn and to solve problems at the same time.
All righty. You heard it here first, folks. Anders thinks that it's not humid enough in Washington. He's got to go down to Florida.
That's
All
right.
righty. I think that's all I got for you. Anything you want to add?
Now it's great to see you. And if we don't talk before, then I'll see you in Orlando.
Oh, yeah. We'll have a nice frosty drink of some kind. Definitely.
Definitely.
All righty. Thanks, Anders.
Thank you, Keith.
Once again, that was a conversation between Keith Reynolds, the editor of Physicians Practice, and Anders Gilberg, Senior Vice President of Government Affairs at MGMA. My name is Austin Luttrell, and on behalf of the whole medical economics and Physicians Practice teams, I'd like to thank you for listening to the show, and ask that you please subscribe so you don't miss the next episode. You can find us by searching Off the Chart wherever you get your podcasts. Also, if you'd like the best stories that medical economics and physicians practice publish delivered straight to your email 6 days of the week, subscribe to our newsletters at medicaleconomics.com and physicianspractice.com. Off the Chart, a Business of Medicine podcast, is executive produced by Chris Mazzolini and Keith Reynolds and produced by Austin Luttrell. Medical economics, physicians practice, and patient care online are all members of the MGH Life Sciences family. Thank you.